quite frankly, the community did not always understand these compositions. They required a very precise knowledge of Hebrew, but even more a familiarity with the corpus of the biblical literature, of rabbinic literature. They are full of allusions, and yet these are some of the most beautiful prayers that we have today. Moreover, certain calamities throughout Jewish history, such as the destruction of European communities during the Crusader period, also encouraged the composition of poems that are recited on certain days of mourning, and one prayer is actually recited every Sabbath, and it commemorates the destruction of certain Jewish communities in Western Europe. Certain modern realities find their way into the liturgy as well. For instance, most diaspora communities, including those of the United States today, publicly recite a prayer asking for God's guidance and protection for the officers and government of the government. I remember myself seeing this in synagogues in the former Soviet Union. And clearly, it was important for Jews there to pray for the government, whether they believed that God was listening or not. They knew that somebody else was listening, and that was clearly the prudent thing to do. Many synagogues today include prayers on behalf of the State of Israel. Thereby, they affirm again what we discussed in an earlier lecture, the link between religion and peoplehood in Judaism. Rabbinic Judaism considered prayer to be a public expression of religious fealty, and as a result, almost all prayers, and especially the Amidah, are recited in the plural form. And again, this is a communal expression. We are praying to God, not I am praying. Public prayer requires a quorum of 10, known as a minyan. Orthodox Jews today require 10 males, whereas conservative and reform stress egalitarianism, and so they, of course, consider women and men equal as part of the quorum of 10. What is important, though, is that any 10 people can constitute a quorum. No rabbinic or priestly officials are required for prayer. Although those who are blessed with a good voice and a knowledge of the traditional tunes would naturally be requested to lead the service. But anybody can do it. Today, synagogues are recognized as the main setting for prayer. But this was not the case in the earliest synagogues of antiquity. First of all, there is absolutely no mention of synagogues explicitly in the Hebrew Bible. When synagogues appear for the first time, we saw they carried out all sorts of other functions, like the reading of Torah, but not prayer. The word synagogue, in fact, suggests that it really served a communal purpose. The word synagogue in Greek means assembly, very similar to the Greek word ekklesia for church. And the Hebrew equivalent is Beit Knesset, literally then house of assembly. And I think this suggests a variegated role for the earliest synagogues where communities would gather for all sorts of reasons. The ancient Jewish historian Josephus describes a gathering in the synagogue of Tiberias in Galilee to prepare for an imminent war against the Romans, clearly not a function of worship. The major function of pre-70 CE synagogues, we saw, was the reading, the public reading of Torah, and its exposition through the delivery of a sermon. And the New Testament, among other sources, describes both Jesus and Paul delivering sermons in synagogues. The Torah is read regularly in the synagogue as part of the service. Larger portions are read on the Sabbath and on the holidays. On weekdays, two weekday mornings, Monday and Thursday, small portions are read. What is important is that the complete Torah, all the five books of Moses, are read in the course of 1 year. And the final day, or the day in which Jews read the final portion of the Torah, is the very same day in which they begin the new cycle. And of course, the idea there is clear. One never ends. There is a constant repetition. You are constantly celebrating the Torah. Indeed, the name of that day is Simchat Torah, the joy of prayer. Prayer, Torah reading, and a sermon would become the core of synagogue service in many synagogues today as well, as they were in the past. The first two, prayer and Torah reading, are required. The sermon is not, although I wonder if we asked rabbis what they would have to say about that. There is no required architecture for a synagogue. And in principle, a synagogue service can be conducted anywhere, even in a private house. In fact, this phenomenon has had a renaissance in recent generations, where young people have an aversion towards entering cathedral-like synagogues, and they actually prefer much smaller, much more simple surroundings in which to pray, for spiritual reasons.